Kassad was dimly aware that the seat was projecting its own containment field as it tumbled. Flame was centimeters from his face. Pyro bolts fired, kicking the ejection seat out of the squid's blazing slipstream. The command seat made its own track of blue flame across the sky. Microprocessors spun the seat so that the disk of the force field was between Kassad and the furnace of friction. A giant sat on Kassad's chest as he decelerated across 2,000 kilometers of sky at 8 gravities. Kassad forced his eyelids to open once, noted that he lay curled in the belly of a long column of blue-white flame, and then he closed his eyes again. He saw no sign of a control for a parachute, suspension pack, or any other braking device. It didn't matter. He could not move his arms or hands in any case. The giant shifted, grew heavier. Kassad realized that part of his helmet bubble had melted or been blown away. The noise was indescribable. It didn't matter. He closed his eyes more tightly. It was a good time to take a nap. Kassad opened his eyes and saw the dark shape of a woman bending over him. For a second, he thought it was her. He looked again and realized that it was her. She touched his cheek with cool fingers. "Am I dead?" whispered Kassad, raising his own hand to grip her wrist.
"No."
Her voice was soft and throaty, blurred with the hint of an accent he could not place. He had never heard her speak before.
"You're real?" "Yes."
Kassad sighed and looked around. He lay naked under a thin robe on some sort of couch or platform set in the middle of a dark, cavernous room. Overhead, starlight was visible through a broken roof. Kassad raised his other hand to touch her shoulder. Her hair was a dark nimbus above him. She wore a loose, thin gown which, even in the starlight, allowed him to see the outlines of her body. He caught her scent, the fragrant hint of soap and skin and her that he knew so well from their other times together.
"You must have questions,"
she whispered as Kassad released the gold clasp which held her gown in place. The gown whispered to the floor. She wore nothing underneath. Above them, the band of the Milky Way was clearly visible. "No," said Kassad, and pulled her to him. Toward morning, a breeze arose, but Kassad pulled the light cover over them. The thin material seemed to preserve all of their body heat, and they lay together in perfect warmth. Somewhere, sand or snow rasped at bare walls. The stars were very clear and very bright. They awoke at the first hint of dawn, their faces close together under the silken coverlet. She ran her hand down Kassad's side, finding old and recent scars.
"Your name?" whispered Kassad.
"Hush,"
she whispered back, her hand sliding lower. Kassad moved his face into the scented curve of her neck. Her breasts were soft against him. Night paled to morning. Somewhere, sand or snow blew against bare walls. They made love, slept, made love again. In full light, they rose and dressed. She had laid out underwear, gray tunic, and trousers for Kassad. They fit perfectly, as did the sponge socks and soft boots. The woman wore a similar outfit of navy blue.
"Your name?"
Kassad asked as they left the building with the shattered dome and walked through a dead city.
"Moneta,"
said his dream.
"Or Nemosyne, whichever name pleases you more."
"Moneta," whispered Kassad. He looked up at a small sun rising into a lapis sky.
"This is Hyperion?"
"Yes."
"How did I land?"
Suspensor field? Parachute?
You descended under a wing of gold foil.
I don't hurt. There were no wounds?
They were tended to.
What is this place?
The city of poets, abandoned more than 100 years ago. Beyond that hill lie the time tombs.
The ouster assault boats that were following me.
One landed nearby. The Pain Lord took the crew unto himself. The other two set down some distance away.
Who is the Pain Lord?
Come,
said Moneta. The dead city ended in desert. Fine sand slid across white marble, half buried in dunes. To the west, an ouster dropship sat with its portals irised open. Nearby, on a fallen column, a therm cube yielded hot coffee and fresh-baked rolls. They ate and drank in silence. Kassad worked to recall the legends of Hyperion. The Pain Lord is the Shrike, he said at last.
Of course.
You're from here? From the City of Poets? Moneta smiled and slowly shook her head. Kassad finished his coffee and set the cup down. The feeling that he was in a dream persisted, much stronger than during any sim he had ever participated in. But the coffee had tasted pleasantly bitter. The sun was warm on his face and hands.
Come, Kassad, said Moneta.
They crossed expanses of cold sand. Kassad found himself glancing skyward, knowing that the ouster torch ship could lance them from orbit. Then knowing, with a sudden certainty, that it would not. The time tombs lay in a valley. A low obelisk glowed softly. A stone sphinx seemed to absorb the light. A complex structure of twisted pylons threw shadows onto itself. Other tombs were silhouettes against the rising sun. Each of the tombs had a door, and each door was open. Kassad knew that they had been open when the first explorers discovered the tombs, and that the structures were empty. More than 3 centuries of searching for hidden rooms, tombs, vaults, and passageways had been fruitless.
This is as far as you can go,
Moneta said as they neared the cliff at the head of the valley.
The time tides are strong today.
Kassad's tactical implant was silent. He had no comm log. He searched his memory. There are anti-entropic force fields around the time tombs, he said.
Yes.
The tombs are ancient. The anti-entropic fields keep them from aging.
No,
said Moneta.
The time tides drive the tombs backward through time.
Backward through time, Kassad repeated stupidly.
Look.
Shimmering, mirage-like, a tree of steel thorns appeared out of the haze, and a sudden dust storm of ochre sand. The thing seemed to fill the valley, rising at least 200 meters to the height of the cliffs. Branches shifted, dissolved, and reformed like elements of a poorly tuned hologram. Sunlight danced on 5-meter-long thorns. Corpses of ouster men and women, all naked, were impaled on at least a score of these thorns. Other branches held other bodies. Not all were human. The dust storm obscured the view for a moment, and when the wind subsided, the vision was gone.
Come,
said Moneta. Kassad followed her through the fringes of the time tides, avoiding the ebb and flow of the anti-entropic field the way children would play tag with an ocean surf on a broad beach. Kassad felt the pull of the time tides like waves of déjà vu tugging at every cell of his body. Just beyond the entrance to the valley, where hills opened to the dunes and low moors led to the City of Poets, Moneta touched a wall of blue slate and an entrance opened to a long, low room set into the cliff face.
Is this where you live?
Asked Kassad, but saw immediately that there were no signs of habitation. The stone walls of the room were inset with shelves and crowded niches.
"We must ready ourselves,"
whispered Moneta, and the lighting shifted to a golden hue. A long rack lowered its wares, a wafer-thin strip of reflective polymer curtained from the ceiling to serve as a mirror. Kassad watched with the calm passivity of a dreamer as Moneta stripped off her clothes and then his. Their nudity was no longer erotic, merely ceremonial. "You have been in my dreams for years," he told her.
"Yes, your past, my future. The shockwave of events moves across time like ripples on a pond."
Kassad blinked as she raised a gold ferrule and touched his chest. He felt a slight shock and his flesh became a mirror. His head and face, a featureless ovoid, reflecting all the color tones and textures of the room. A second later, Moneta joined him, her body becoming a cascade of reflections, water over quicksilver over chrome. Kassad saw his own reflecting reflection in every curve and muscle of her body. Moneta's breasts caught and bent the light. Her nipples rose like small splashes on a mirrored pond. Kassad moved to embrace her and felt their surfaces flow together like magnetized fluid. Under the connected fields, his flesh touched hers.
"Your enemies await beyond the city," she whispered.
The chrome of her face flowed with light. "Enemies?"
"The ousters. The ones who followed you here."
Kassad shook his head, saw the reflection do likewise. "They're not important anymore."
"Oh, yes," whispered Moneta. "The enemy is always important. You must arm yourself."
"With what?" But even as he spoke, Kassad realized that she was touching him with a bronze sphere, a dull blue toroid. His altered body spoke to him now as clearly as troops reporting in on an implant command circuit. Kassad felt the bloodlust build in him with turgid strength.
"Come."
Moneta led the way into an open desert again. The sunlight seemed polarized and heavy. Kassad felt that they were gliding across the dunes, flowing like liquid through the white marble streets of the dead city. Near the west end of town, near the shattered remnants of a structure still bearing the inscribed lintel of Poets' Amphitheater, something stood waiting. For a second, Kassad thought it was another person wearing the chromium force fields he and Moneta were draped in. But only for a second. There was nothing human about this particular quicksilver over chrome construct. Kassad dreamily noted the four arms, retractable finger blades, the profusion of thorn spikes on throat, forehead, wrists, knees, and body. But not once did his gaze leave the 2,000 faceted eyes, which burned with a red flame that paled sunlight and dimmed the day to blood shadows. "The Shrike," thought Kassad.
"The Lord of Pain,"
whispered Moneta. The thing turned and led them out of the dead city.